Following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay. So I'll start a little formally. That this is 18086 in the spring semester of 2006. And we're lucky to have it videotaped for OpenCourseWare. So let me begin by remembering the main topics from what you might call the first half, 18085, the fall course. And then, most important to us, so gets a star, are the main topics for this course. So 18085 began with applied linear algebra, the discrete equations of mechanics and physics and engineering, and the type of matrices that involved. So we learned what positive definite matrices are. Then the center of the course was differential equations, ordinary differential equations, so that was 1D, partial differential equations like Laplace, that was 2D, with boundary values. So that led to systems of equations. And then the third big topic was Fourier methods, all of Fourier ideas, series, integrals, discrete transform. So that's like the first half of the course. Well, that's 18085. Okay, and here we are. So this course has also three major topics. The first, the one we start on today, is differential equations that start from initial values. So I'm thinking of the wave equation, where we're given the displacement of velocity, the heat equation, Black-Scholes equation, which comes from finance, is a version of the heat equation. Ordinary differential equations, that's going to be today. And nonlinear equations, Navier-Stokes ultimately, but not heavily Navier-Stokes. So this is where we begin. And then the second big topic is how to solve, because this is, of course, is really applied math and scientific computing. The second big topic is how do you solve a large linear system AX equal B? Do you do it by direct methods of elimination with renumbering of nodes, and there are lots of tricks that make elimination very successful, or do you do it by iterative methods? Multi-grid is one. So this is really modern scientific computing we're talking about. We're really at the point where people are computing. And then the third topic, which is a little different, is optimization, minimization. It comes up in, I mean, linear programming would be one example, but among many, many. I mean, so that's a major area in applied math. Okay, so this is our topic, differential equations. And I was asked before the tape started about my own background, and my thesis was in this topic. Because a key question for will be stability. Is the difference method stable? You'll see that that's a requirement for to be any good. You really have to sort out what, and that usually puts a limitation on the time step. So we're going to have a time step, and it may be limited by the requirement of stability. And the fact that stability and convergence, success of the method, are so intimately linked, there was a key paper by Lacks and Richtmeier that we'll look at. It's known now as the Lacks equivalence theorem, stability and convergence. We'll see it in detail. So my thesis was, actually when I was a grad student, I was like good chance. I was asked to, it was a seminar, and I was asked to report on some paper, and it happened to be that one. And I just, looking back, think, gosh, I was lucky, because that paper, the Lax-Rickmeyer paper with the Lax equivalence theorem, set the question of stability, and then years of effort went into finding tests for stability. How do you decide, is the method stable? So we'll see some of that. Okay. Since then, I've worked on other things. Well, wavelets would be one that relates to Fourier, and other topics too, and lots of linear algebra. But it's a pleasure to look back to the beginning on that one. Okay, and then, so that's the OpenCourseWare site, which does have the course outline and other information about the course, some of which I have mentioned informally or before the class. This is our central website with no decimal in 18086, which will have notes coming up, MATLAB things, problems, all the... That's our contact, really. It will be the 086 page. Okay, so that's the course outline in three lines, and then the web page and a handout would give you half a dozen subheadings under those three. Okay, so that's the course, and actually it's the center of scientific computing. There would be other courses at MIT covering material like that, because it's just so basic. You can't go without it. All right. So now I'm ready to start on the first lecture, which will be ordinary differential equations. And I won't always have things so clearly and beautifully written on the board, but today I'm better organized. So here's our problem, ordinary differential equations. So we're given initial values. I won't initial values u at t equals 0. Okay, so there's always an initial value here. The question is, what's the equation that makes it evolve? Okay, so often we'll think in terms of one equation. The unknown will be u of t. But in reality, there are typically n equations. N might be 6 or 12 or something in a small problem. But also, n could be very large. We'll see how easily that happens. Okay. And I want to often to discuss stability or understand a method and try it, the linear case is the natural one. So I'll use little au with a small a to make us think of we've got a scalar, or a capital A to indicate we're talking about a matrix. And the correspondence between this and the more general, possibly, so these are linear. These are likely to be not linear. But there's a natural match between the number A there corresponds to the partial of F with respect to U. And, of course, we see it. If that was F, then its derivative is indeed A. And in this matrix case, there will be a Jacobian matrix. We have N right-hand sides because I have N use, and the matrix that comes in is the derivative of right-hand side in equation I with respect to unknown J. So it's a n by n matrix, and of course, this is the case where it's a constant. Yeah, I should have said, these are not only linear, but constant coefficients. So we know, of course, the solution. It's an exponential, e to the at. times u0, the initial function. So we know everything about it. Nevertheless, it's the best test case for difference methods. And let me just comment that we do have to pay attention to the possibility that A could be complex. Mostly I'll think of A as real and often negative. Often the equation will be stable. A negative A means that the e to the AT decreases. A negative definite matrix, negative eigenvalues mean that the matrix exponential decays. And if that matrix is symmetric, those eigenvalues are all real. So that's a key case. Symmetric matrices have real eigenvalues, and they're the most important, most attractive class. And they may become a negative definite matrix might come from a diffusion term like second derivative, d second u dx squared. But a convection term, du dx, from a first derivative will not be symmetric. In fact, maybe it'll be anti-symmetric. It will push the eigenvalues into the complex plane. And therefore, we have to pay attention to the possibility of complex A. So a small a is, as you know, the whole point of eigenvalues is that we can understand matrices to a very large extent by diagonalizing, by reducing them to n scalar equations with the eigenvalues as the little a's in those scalar equations. So anyway, that's the setup. Now I want to say something about methods. Before I want to introduce some of the names. Just what am I thinking here? This topic, today's topic of ordinary differential equations, is not going to last long in 1806. I might still be discussing it tomorrow, but not Friday, I mean, but not much after that. We'll soon be on to partial differential equations. But so I want to sort of tell you about ordinary differential equations, in a kind of organized way, so that you know the competing methods, and also so that you know this key distinction between non-stiff is a typical equation. U prime equal minus 4u would be a non-stiff, completely normal equation. But for that, those are the relatively easy ones to solve. We can use explicit differences, and I'll say what that word explicit means. What I want to do is just like help you organize in your mind. So non-stiff are the average, everyday differential equations. For those, we can use explicit methods that are fast, and we can make them accurate. And explicit means, so this is the first meaning, that I compute the new u, and I'll use capital U at time step n plus 1. So that's capital U at the new time, natural to call that the new time, can be computed directly from u at the old time, maybe u at the time before that, maybe u at the times before that. Some in EE terms, it's causal. The new u, it comes explicitly by some formula that we'll construct from the previous computations. So it's fast. of course, I not only use UN, but I use F of UN. So I should say from UN itself and from F of UN at time TN, and similarly for earlier times. But F, you see how fast that is, because the only new calculation of F is this one. The previous step produced UN, and at the new step, this step, we plug it in to find out what the slope is. And that may be the expensive calculation, because F could involve all sorts of functions, all sorts of physical constants. It can be complicated or not. But if it is, we only have to do it once here. That's explicit. Now, what's the opposite? Implicit. So the point about implicit methods is that the difference equation, the formula, involves not just UN plus one, the new value, but also the slope at that new value, at that new unknown value. So it means that an implicit equation could be nonlinear, because if F is not linear, then this term could involve cosines or exponentials or whatever of the unknown UN plus one. So that way you can't do it as fast. So this is definitely slower per step. But the advantage and the reason it gets used for stiff problems is that on stiff problems it will allow a much larger step. Constant trade-off of speed versus stability. These are less stable, as we'll see, and we'll have to see what stability means. These are slower but more stable, implicit methods. Okay, so that's the... I didn't yet say what stiff is. I'll say that in a moment. Okay, so explicit versus implicit. UN plus one immediately, or UN plus one only by maybe using Newton's method to solve an equation because UN plus one appears in a complicated formula, and we have an equation to solve. Okay, so now this part of the board begins to identify different methods. And I'll follow this same two-column system, that non-stiff versus stiff. So this will be explicit, and those will be implicit. Okay. So the one method that occurs to everybody right away is Euler's method. And we'll see, that'll be the first method we'll construct, of course. So that's the first idea anybody would have. It has the minimum accuracy. It's first order. The order of accuracy will be an issue for all methods. And Euler has P equal 1, order P equal 1, first order. So it's too crude. I mean, if you were tracking a space station with Euler's method, you would lose it real fast. Or you would have to take delta t so small that it would be impossible. So Euler's method is the first one you think of, but not the one you finish with. And similarly, on the implicit side, backward Euler, we'll see, is again the first implicit method you think of. But in the end, you probably want to do better. Okay. So those are two specific methods that are easy to... The first ones we'll write down. Now, then come families of methods, especially these Adams families. So Adams-Bashforth is explicit. Adams-Moulton are implicit, and the coefficients are in books on numerical analysis. And we'll be on the web. And I'll say more about them, of course, and see the first ones. So what Adams Bashforth, how does it differ from Adams Bolton? Okay. Then there's another. So those are multi-step methods. Number two was multi-step methods. Going to get more accurate, we use more old values. So Adams Bolton and Adams Bashforth, or especially Adams Bashforth, would use several old values to get the order of accuracy up high. Okay. Now, this third category, of course, actually, Euler would be the first of the Adams Bashforth, and backward Euler might be early in Adams Bolton. Or maybe backward Euler is early in backward differences. Okay. So what I want to say is, Runge-Kutta is like a different approach to constructing methods. You might know what some of these are already. And it's a one-step method. These are, that's a method that just produces by half steps, you could say, it gets to UN plus one. But it's explicit. And the code in MATLAB, the code ODE45, or maybe I should say ODE45, is like the workhorse of ODEs. I guess I'm hoping you'll try that. You'll find ODE45, and I'll try to get onto the web, but you could just easily discover the syntax to call it and apply it to an equation. Yeah, that I'll get examples on the web, and please do examples. So this is the 4-5 typically means that you use a fourth order Runge-Kutta, so that's pretty accurate. To get up to fourth order means the error after a up at time t equal 1, say, is delta t to the fourth. So by cutting delta t in half, you divide the error by 16. And then it also uses a fifth order one. And maybe I can point to these words. What makes ODE45 good, successful? It is that, I mean, how does it work? It slows down or speeds up. It speeds up when it can, it slows down when it has to. And speed up means a bigger delta t. Slow down means a smaller delta t for the sake of stability or accuracy. Yeah. So if the equation is suddenly doing something, if the solution is suddenly doing something, you know, important and quick, then probably at that period, delta t will get reduced automatically by ODE45. It'll cut it in half again. Because it's constantly, every good code is constantly estimating, using internal checks to estimate what error it's making. About the error, just a quick word about the error. So ODE45, it will, unless you tell it otherwise, the default accuracy that it will adjust for is a relative, so ODE45 will have a relative accuracy, so can I just squeeze in a few words, of 10 to the minus 3. It'll shoot for that. And an absolute accuracy of 10 to the minus 6. So it will try to keep the error. It will plan to keep the error, and it'll tell you if it has a problem, below 10 to the minus 6, and you could set that differently. I hope you experiment a little with OD45, and you can either plot the solution, some exponential, and push it. Like, let delta T be pretty big and see where it breaks down. Well, I guess OD45 is engineered not to break down. If you try a delta T, it'll decide on what delta T it can do. So we'll also code, just quickly, some methods by ourselves and see for a large delta T what problems could happen. Okay, and then backward differences. That's the category of implicit methods for stiff equations, and backward Euler would be the very first. And ODE15S is the code that is the most used code, perhaps, for stiff equations. And it will do the same thing. It will vary delta T. It will vary the order. If it has to slow down, it may slow, and things are happening too quickly, it may change to a low order, safe, secure method. When things are, when the satellite is buzzing out in space, and it can take giant steps, or it can have high order accuracy. Say in astronomy, of course, they would go up to eighth order and higher, tracking, estimating where stars would go or planets. These will do that automatically up to a certain point. And we could write codes, and of course people have, for Adams-Bashforth and Adams-Moulton, varying delta T, varying P. I guess here's a comment. If I had given this lecture yesterday, I would have emphasized number two, Adams-Bashforth and Adams-Moulton, because books do it, and I basically learned this subject from the major textbooks on ODEs. But I had a conversation with one of the computational scientists in the math department, and that changed the lecture. Because I learned that also books tend to, I discussed those, the Adams methods, in practice, these methods, the methods three, Runge-Kutta and backward differences, are the most used. So really, that's reflected in the fact that these two major codes that are available in MATLAB are in the number three category. Okay. So now I've used, that's a picture with names, but not details, right? I mean, I guess, and I haven't even said what stiff means. So somewhere I've written something about stiff. Yeah. Okay. So stiff means, so if I had only e to the minus t in the solution, then the solution would decay at that rate, e to the minus t. The time step would adjust to keep it accurate. And if I have only e to the minus 99 t, then again, that of course is a faster decay, much faster decay. So the time step would adjust to be much smaller, probably about 1/99th or something. Anyway, much smaller to capture within each step the correct behavior of e to the minus 99 t, and no problem. So in other words, it's not the minus 99 that makes it stiff. If it was only the minus 99, in other words, if I had a equal minus 99 up there, I wouldn't call it a stiff equation. What makes it stiff is the combination here, where You see, what's going to happen as time gets anywhere? This is going to control U of T. The decay of U of T is going to be, have that time constant, 1. But this is going to control, so I'll say but, this would control delta T for explicit methods. And I just picked minus 99, but it could have been minus 999 or far worse. So it could be very stiff. So stiff is this, stiff equations were kind of, you know, that this word stiff and identifying this class of problems, which now is familiar to everybody who has to compute, didn't come, you know, with Gauss and so on, came much more recently. But it's become very important now to distinguish stiff from non-stiff. So where do stiff problems arise? Well, you can see how they arise in chemical processes with very different decay rates, biological processes, control theory, all sorts of cases where there's a big dynamic range of rates. And they also arise in systems because the eigenvalues could be minus 1 and minus 99. I can easily create a matrix that has those two eigenvalues. So it would be a system. Let me create such a matrix. I think probably if I put minus 50s on the diagonal, that gives a trace. Sum down the diagonal is minus 100, and that should equal the sum of the eigenvalues. So far, so good. And now if I want these two particular numbers, I could put 49 here. So that matrix has those two eigenvalues. So you see this is the kind of matrix, well, you might say ill-conditioned would be a word that you hear for a matrix like this. The condition number is the ratio, so the condition number of this matrix would be the ratio 99 over 1. And that condition number is a number that MATLAB computes all the time. Every time you give it a matrix problem like this, it estimates, not computes, because to compute the condition number requires solving an eigenvalue problem, and it doesn't want to take forever to do that exactly, but it gets an estimate which shows that the so that's only a moderate condition number of a 99. That's not a disaster, but it makes the point. Okay. So that's what stiff equations are. Okay. Now I've got one more board prepared. I won't have this every day, but let me use it while I've got it. Okay. Oh, well, it's only prepared in the sense of telling us what we're going to do. So this is what's coming, a construction of methods, what stability is about, and what's convergence. So let me begin. Let me get Euler constructed today and backward Euler. So Euler's method will be the most obvious method equals F at UN. So in the model case, it's AUM. So that's Euler. So that tells us then that we could rewrite it. UN plus 1 is explicitly 1 plus A delta T UN. Right? I moved up the delta T, and I moved over the UN, and it's simple like that. Okay. So what's the solution after N time steps? Well, let me stay with Euler for a moment. After n steps, every step just multiplied by 1 by this growth factor. Let me refer to that as the growth factor, even if it's, as I hope, smaller than 1. So un after n steps is this thing has multiplied n times u0. And what is stability now? Stability is, suppose A is negative. Typically. That means, we'll think of that model. A negative, so that the differential equation is completely stable, right? The e to the minus at, e to the at with A negative is perfect. Question is this one perfect? So stability will be, is this number below 1? That's the test. Is that, we could argue about, are we going to let it equal 1? Maybe I'll let it equal 1. So 1 plus A delta T smaller than 1. That'll be the stability requirement for forward Euler. And what's the A delta T? What's the boundary? What's the critical value of A delta T? A, remember, A negative. How negative can it be? Or how negative can this you see it's the combination A delta T. So let me put above here what the stability condition is. So the stability condition on Euler is going to be, so do you see what it is? How negative can A delta T be? Go ahead. You don't even have to push the. Well, let's see. So if A delta T, this is a negative number, so this is dragging us down from 1 always, right? A delta T is like a subtracting away from 1. So we're here with the 1, and A delta T is pulling us this way, and how far, at what point are we going to meet instability? When we hit minus 1, this is the 1 plus A delta T that I'm graphing here. So it starts at 1 with delta T equals 0, and as I increase delta T, it moves this way, and eventually it hits there, and the limit will be at A delta T equal minus 2, right? Because if it carries me 2 from 1, that carries me to minus 1. And if I go further, I'm unstable. And you could easily check that Euler will blow up like crazy if you just go a little beyond that limit, because you're taking powers of a number bigger than below minus 1. Okay, so there's the stability limit for Euler. And that's a pretty unpleasant restriction. We will have other stability limits. We'll have some stability limits over here, but we're looking for numbers better than 2. This, Adams-Bashforth will give us numbers worse than 2. We'll see those methods first thing next time. Okay. Now, let me just get back. Okay. So if I drew a picture then, let's see, have I got another board here? Nope. Well, if I drew a picture of good Euler, so Euler doing its job, the true solution is decaying like that, and what does Euler do? Forward Euler says, it looks here. It looks at the slope. That's all it knows. It goes maybe that far. That's a small delta T. That's an okay method. Well, you see it's not very accurate, of course. It's lost all the curvature in the solution. So this was the true solution, e to the at, and this is the 1 plus a delta T to the power, well, T over delta T times, I guess. Well, no, this was only one step, so that would be just 1 plus A delta T. Okay. Where the unstable one, if I just try to draw that, it the true solution is the E to the AT, but I start with that value and the right slope, but I take too big a time step and I'm below minus one. So it's that large, so that was a case of a large delta T, too large delta T. Okay. Now I've got 1 minute left to mention backward Euler. Well, that won't take me long. I'll just change this to un plus 1. So I'm evaluating the slope at the new time. So this is now backward Euler. Backward or implicit Euler. Okay. So what that changes this equation. This changes... Oh, let's find out the equation for implicit Euler. Okay. Maybe since I only have one more moment, I'll just pop it in this little corner. So now here's backward Euler. All right, you can tell me what backward Euler is going to be. So un plus 1 minus un over delta t is a u n plus 1. So let me collect the n plus 1s. So I have one of them, and then minus a delta t, right? And when I bring it over to the left side, and here I just have un. Okay. So what happens at every step now? I divide. Every step is a division by this. So I could bring this into the denominator. So un is that division times u0. And do you see the stability? What's the size of this growth factor? Remember, I'm thinking of a as a negative. I'm dealing with a stable differential equation. And so what's the main point about this growth factor, this ratio in parentheses? It is, if A is negative, what do I know about that number? Think of A as minus 2, let's say. So then I have 1 over 1 plus 2 delta T, because it's minus A there. And it's going to be smaller than 1. It's going to be stable. So Euler is actually absolutely stable. Backward Euler. Backward Euler has this property of A stability. There is no stability limit on negative A. No problem. Or even pure imaginary A. No problem. Always stable. So that shows how implicit methods can be greatly much more stable than explicit, just comparing backward to forward to backward Euler. But just to remind you, the price is that this equation has to be solved. Well, it wasn't any trouble in the linear case. In the linear case, we're just inverting a matrix for a linear system. So backward Euler for a linear system, big linear system, is a matrix inversion. Well, a matrix linear system to solve. But for a nonlinear problem, it's serious work. And yet, you have to do the work if the explicit method gives you such a small delta t that it's impossible to go with. Okay, thanks for... patience on this first lecture. So obviously I'm going to have one more discussion of ODEs in which we construct these methods, see their stability and their convergence. And then we move on to the PDEs. So